Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is brand new guest on the podcast, Adrian Hahn. How are you today, Adrian?
Doing well, thanks. Glad to be here.
Great, absolutely. It's our pleasure to have you. And for our audience, Adrian is the CEO at Six to Start, an award-winning games company, and co-creators of Zombies Run. Adrian was previously a neuroscientist at the University of Cambridge and the University of Oxford, director of Play at Mind Candy, and technology writer for The Telegraph. Once again, thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast. And my first question for you, Adrian, is one that I ask a lot of our guests here, and it's kind of a staple for us. What inspired you to become an author?
Well, you know, I think like a lot of people, I've loved reading, you know, all kinds of fiction and nonfiction through my life. And, you know, the book that I wrote a couple of years ago was called A History of the Future and 100 Objects. And it kind of combined two of my passions, which is, you know, fiction, but also thinking about the future. And in a kind of historical sense, if that makes sense, the book was written from the perspective of a historian from like 100 years from now, looking at the most influential objects of the 21st century. And so that's, I was really inspired by, obviously, books like A History of the World and 100 Objects, but also, you know, futurology, you know, people like Stuart Brand, Neal Stephenson, Werner Vinge, you know, really a whole mix of different things.
Great, very fascinating. And for our audience and those listening, links to Adrian's book will be in the description below, so you can go and you can check it out. You can find the all the information that you need, and of course you will be also be able to purchase it. And my next question for you, Adrian, as we move on, is Six to Start are the creators of the highly successful Zombies Run game, which now has over 4 million players worldwide. So how did the idea of combining zombies and a fitness game come around for you?
Sure, yeah, it's pretty different game. So I've been a runner for a long time now. I started running when I was at university, and I found it quite, you know, tedious and painful. It's not at all like what they show you in the adverts. And I remember thinking that it would be much more fun if running were made into some kind of game, particularly a kind of storytelling game. And I mentioned this to our co-creator, Naomi Alderman. And Naomi, I've worked with her for a long time. She's a fantastic novelist. And she said that she'd just joined a running group, and in the running group they'd asked people why were they running, and one woman said that she wanted to lose weight, another person wanted to get fit, and one person said that they wanted to survive the zombie apocalypse. And we thought, well, if we put these two things together, they actually work really well. You know, a story set in the zombie apocalypse where you have to run to survive. So that's where the idea came from.
Yeah, and I think that's a very fresh perspective on the whole zombie genre, which I think really took a boom, you know, many years ago with stuff like Left 4 Dead, and not only within the gaming scene, but with films and movies and everything. But for me, it was very fascinating that as we talked about it in the office today, there were three team members, actually, which said, yeah, I've got that installed and I use it. And it's actually really interesting. They all love it. And I think it's a great idea. Now, going forward, can you tell us a bit about the new project that you guys are working on, which is called Racelink, and is described as a thrilling immersive experience by combining GPS tracking with dynamic audio and music? Does it build up from Zombies Run, or is it something that you guys are experimenting with?
Oh, it's a huge thing for us now. So a couple of years ago, when we were making Zombies Run, one of our fans said that we should try and do a Zombies Run virtual race. And I'm sure a lot of people don't know what virtual races are. I didn't know really back then. So virtual races where you pay to enter a race. So you might pay 10, 15, 20 pounds and you get, you know, swag, you get like a medal and a certificate and that sort of thing. But unlike a normal race, you can run the race wherever you are in the world at any time you want. So it's much more flexible. And to be honest, at first I found it a little bit weird that people would basically buy a medal. But in reality, people participate and they enter virtual races for a lot of good reasons. One is for a sense of motivation. People obviously train towards races. Another one is also for the social interaction, because people train together. And so we did a virtual race for Zombies Run about over a year ago, and it was just incredibly successful. I thought we might get 1,000 people. Instead, we had 2,500 people sign up. The next race we did after that, we had 5,000 people sign up. And even though the race entry cost as much or a little bit more than a normal real-world race. And I think one of the reasons we were able to do that is because in our races and in Zombies Run, we combine real-world running with the story. So in our virtual races, you aren't just running and getting a medal. You feel like you are this kind of hero who can you can hear other characters around you, you can hear the zombies behind you, and you need to run in order to advance. And so these virtual races we're doing just got more and more popular. We aren't the only people to do virtual races. There are other companies who do virtual races, but ours are by far the most sophisticated. And so we had charities get in touch with us last year saying, hey, can you organize a virtual race for us? And so what we did last year and this year is we took some of what we learned and the experiences and the sort of fulfillment service we have behind our own virtual races, and we turned it into this new platform called RaceLink. So RaceLink, it's a kind of like a platform where brands, charities, and individuals can go and create virtual races and sell them to people around the world. So it's almost like a marketplace. And all you have to do, or all the charities or the brands have to do, is come up with the content, and we can help with that. And we will do everything else. We have the app, we have the website, we have everything already built and battle tested, because it uses the same sort of technology we developed for Zombies Run, which is played by 4 million people. So it shares a lot of DNA, you know, a lot of kind of spiritual DNA with Zombies Run, but it allows really anyone to kind of make their own races, whether that's for, you know, 100 people or even 100,000 people. We can really scale that far.
That sounds awesome, and hopefully we will get to see it in action soon. I can't wait personally. It sounds like a great idea. But going back to you, your background is in neuroscience. You're a neuroscientist, and you've worked both at Cambridge and Oxford. How has the knowledge you acquired helped you in your tech and gaming market ventures?
Well, I mean, I'd be lying if I said that, you know, my kind of specific neuroscience experience was directly useful in sort of technology and gaming. There are some psychological principles that kind of apply to game design in terms of, you know, how you make compelling games. But I think that it's really a bit more abstract than that. You know, the sort of skills that I learned as a neuroscientist are, you know, respecting data, being able to kind of write concisely, communicate concisely. That's really important for scientists, you know, and, you know, coming up with experiments. So there are learnings from that I used, but it probably isn't true that they were sort of directly so. Of course, if we were to make like a brain training game or something like that, then I'm sure it would be much more useful.
Right. And from my personal experience, what I find a lot when it comes to the gaming industry is, and it's something that I linked especially to your background, is a aspect of design in games, which is the UI, basically how a game feels, and how easy it is for you to understand what you need to be doing, whether it's during the menus or during gameplay. And we had a bit of a sort of questionnaire time around the office, and I did actually ask the other team members, you know, having played Zombies Run, did you guys find the ease of access quite simple? You know, were you able to understand what you were doing, how you were supposed to do it? And they said, yeah. And that really kind of prompted me to ask you that question, since I think maybe perhaps it was subconscious, but it definitely did show an impact within the final product.
Well, you know, I think part of that just comes from my personal, I'm a little bit impatient, I guess, in life. And so I don't like games where you have to spend a lot of time learning what to do.
Right.
You know, and I think that Zombies Run has been designed to be quite an easy game to pick up and to understand. you know, we're not really demanding other than the fact that we want you to run.
Yes.
And so, but, you know, it is true that, that you need to make these things really easy to understand. And there is an element of experiment design in that. You know, you have to sort of be really clear when you do psychological experiments, that people understand what you want them to do.
Yes, and going back to Six to Start, it is a gaming development company. So I think while we're on the subject, it's only natural for me to ask what type of gamer you are, if you are one. Do you have perhaps a favorite genre?
So, you know, I play a lot of games, although I don't really have as much time to spend on them as I used to. So I've got PlayStation 4, I've got a Switch, I'm playing Zelda at the moment, so that's a lot of fun. On the PS4, really enjoy kind of story-based games. People call them walking simulators. And I have games like Firewatch, Gone Home. You know, I also kind of like, you know, first-person shooters, to be honest. Played Dishonored and Titanfall 2, actually quite good. You know, I like games with stories in them. Strategy games are probably the games that I played the most. So games like Civilization 4, 5, 6. So a real kind of range of different games I've played.
Do you perhaps have another developer or another game that you maybe sometimes come back for inspiration or something that you take away from in your own work and the others at Six to Start?
You know, that's interesting. I suppose the issue is not a lot of people make fitness games, so there's not a lot of direct inspiration we can take from the market out there. But you know, most of the people in the company really enjoy playing games, and I think that, you know, we're making a board game at the moment, for example. A lot of us like playing board games, so we're making Zombies Run the board game, and we take a lot of inspiration from games, board games like XCOM, you know, or Robinson Crusoe, real-time games like Escape from the Temple, you know, and Space Alert. You know, we do a lot of research, I suppose, on playtesting to learn from them.
Right. And you've worked with some very large organizations out there, such as the BBC, Channel 4, Penguin Books, eBay, and so on. In your experience, across the board, what do you think is the biggest issues large companies face today when it comes to tech innovation? And I guess in general, just getting into the groove of digitalization, which is happening all around us?
Sure, that's a really good question. You know, we've worked with innovation and R&D departments at the BBC and Disney and Penguin. And I think, you know, on the one hand, it's great that these organizations are thinking about these issues and what happens in the future. On the other hand, I think the biggest issue is how do you, you know, it's one thing to go and do a really cool innovation project, but the question is, how does that benefit the business? And I'm sure all the people who work in innovation departments think about this, you know. So, for example, the BBC and Channel 4 and a lot of companies are looking into VR. They want to know how can we use VR to benefit, you know, our viewers, to benefit the audience. And I would say my main issue with a lot of these innovation ventures is that they're often not very good.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're often sort of given a pass because they don't need to make any money, right? And I would compare that to someone like Apple. And you know, Apple is obviously an exceptional company, and maybe you can't learn too much from them. But also look at Nintendo. Nintendo is a much smaller company. These companies, I'm sure, they do a lot of innovation and R&D in-house, right? But they don't show people what they're doing in terms of innovation and R&D. You only see the result. The finished product, exactly. They don't market dreams. So I'm sure Apple is making virtual reality. They're making, you know, heads-up displays. They're making Siri in a can, like Echo. You know, Nintendo probably experimenting with virtual reality. But they don't distract the public, and they don't get distracted by trying to make demos that are probably not representative of the end technology that we'll use. So let me give an example of that. you know, Microsoft have their HoloLens heads-up display, and we have things like Oculus Rift and HTC Vive, these virtual reality headsets. A lot of people are working on projects for them. But it's pretty clear at this point that these are really just enthusiast devices. You know, you need to spend $1,000, $2,000 to use them. And so the reason why Apple doesn't have and isn't even talking that much about virtual reality, and Nintendo is not really talking that much about virtual reality, is because it's just not good enough. Like, you know, these technologies are not good enough for the mainstream. People, most people won't pay any money for them. And so there's a big question of timing. I think it's really fun for companies to work on, you know, innovation, and I think they should do that in-house, and they should work out what they're going to be good at. But I think it's also equally quite distracting to mistake that for kind of making half-assed, R&D or innovation products that don't make any money.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to say, in my personal experience, having tried a number of virtual reality platforms out there, it was quite interesting for roughly about 15 minutes before some glaring flaws started to pop up here and there. And at the end of it, I just wanted a controller so I can sit down in a beanbag or something similar and just enjoy the game.
I I'm a big believer in virtual reality, and I think that in 5-10 years time, it's going to be huge.
Yes.
So I don't wanna like talk down VR. We have a Vive set up here, and I love it. But I suppose my point is that people are making demos on things like, you know, the Galaxy Gear.
Yes.
You know, on devices that it would be like trying to learn how to make smartphone apps by developing on like the Nokia N95. Like nothing you learn from that is going to be useful for the iPhone. Nothing at all. And so that's really what people are doing at the moment. And I think a lot of it, it's just a complete waste of time to be brutally honest.
Yeah. And my last question, Adrian, is the one that I ask every guest on the podcast, and that is, what are you currently reading?
Yeah, I've read quite a lot this year, which has been great. So most recently, I read this book, Golden Hill, by Francis Spufford. And he's an interesting guy. This is his first novel. And it's all about sort of the economy, I guess, about the sort of development of the economy and the slave trade in the colonial America. And before that, I read this book by Amanda Ripley called The Unthinkable, Who Survives When Disaster Strikes and Why. So this is about the kind of psychology of how people react in, you know, plane crashes and terrorist attacks and that sort of thing, you know, and how, you know, how you keep a level head and why people do the things they do. Like earlier this year, I read a classic. I read Candide by Voltaire, which is really funny, actually, and quite short. So if you're kind of in the mood for learning about Voltaire and about sort of the origins of utopia, then that's a great one to check out.
And with that, thank you so much for joining us today, Adrian. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks. You're welcome. And it's been a great chat.
Yeah, absolutely. And for our audience, if you'd like to know more about Adrian, his work, and Six to Start, you can always find him on Twitter at Adrian Hon, and also on his website, mssv.net, and of course, Six to Start at www.6tostart.com. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio.